Welcome to part two of our interview with Michael Brown and Todd Dehring about haunted Wisconsin theaters. And Todd, did you have any theaters for you that you look back upon in childhood, in the younger years of your life growing up, that stood out to you, that were, ooh, this is a creepy, interesting place? I have a guess on what it may be, but tell me from your own perspective.
Well, there were two. Number one was the Retlaw Theater in Fond du Lac, which had been a great actual theater in its day. It had changed into a movie theater, and they had cut it up into like five different theaters at one time, but a beautiful location. And then another was close to home as well, and that was the Grand Opera House in Oshkosh, which is one of the theaters that we got to investigate for Haunted State Theater of Shadows. And you know, you go into a location like that. I used to go when I was little. We'd take field trips from school and you go see a play or something there. And I wouldn't remember anything about the play, but I specifically remember the theater itself. Like, I remember sitting in the seats looking up because there's a mural on the ceiling. And I think it's Shakespeare is up on the mural. And I remember that from like I was maybe 7 or 8 years old. When we went back and investigated, there it was. So there was a lot of cool feelings there for me. But even when I was little, you go there and it's a little spooky. You know, it's an older building and it's a theater. And I think we went and saw some sort of spooky play there for Halloween or something like that. So it had those feelings. And when we walked away from the investigation, I think out of everything that we did for that movie, I think it was the one experience that I can walk away and go, okay, I can die now, because something really cool finally happened at an investigation, at least for me. It was like the coolest thing up until that point.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, without giving it away, the thing that happened normally when you have something happen, it's like you and maybe another person. It's not eight people on a stage. And what we had happen not only happened once, and if it only happened once, we all would have missed it, right, Todd? We all would have missed it.
Absolutely.
But it happened a second time because I asked, can you do that again? And not only did it happen again, it happened bigger and better, louder, you know? And then the part that really just blows my mind is when you're in a moment like that, you're not really thinking. You're just going, holy shit, did that just happen? Nobody thought to go towards the area where this thing happened. You know, we all just kind of froze. I mean, is that right, Todd? We all just kind of froze. We all looked at each other like, whoa, you know? And so I grabbed the camera. I went up there. And I can honestly tell you that is the most terrified I've been in my life filming. Going up those stairs knowing that there was 100% something just up there because we had this experience. And when I got up there, I mean, I saw my hand on the camera and just shaking, and I'm trying to stop making myself shake, and I couldn't. And I like to pretend to be a big tough guy, which I'm clearly not, but it's that place for me, absolutely every place I've ever filmed, greatest moment I've ever had. I agree with Todd. Like, we could die, because most people who film do not have an experience like that. And we did. We had it happen twice. And I still do not know. It was so crazy even that I had to take the footage back to the theater and say, here's what happened. And I wish I had been rolling on the camera when I did that, because the looks on all of their faces, completely priceless. And we even tried to debunk it. Like, what could have caused this? And there was no explanation at all for it.
It's a very interesting theater, and one that I do remember growing up. There was always stories, and I remember going to field trips there, and two, just looking at the architecture and the ornate artwork that was all over that building, and is all over that building, and always just hearing the words, "Oh, it's haunted," or "There's ghosts here." What were some of the legends behind the theater there, the Grand Theater in Oshkosh, Wisconsin? Not necessarily what exactly you guys discovered, but what were some of the legends that you remember or had heard leading up to it?
Yeah, I had heard a lot about Native Americans, mm-hmm. Some tie in with there being paranormal experiences involving entities that look like Native Americans. I didn't have any experience like that when we were there, but there was a, I have to be careful how to say this. There were many entities there that I think are from the Oshkosh community. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of accounts where people don't know each other and they're having the same experiences, maybe years apart, but they're having the same experiences. There was one experience that a lot of people had where there would be like a ghost dog. And we actually had evidence while we were filming of this situation. And you hear like a dog barking. It's like a residual dog bark. And people would see a dog, which, I mean, we're all animal lovers, so, I mean, we welcome that, of course. But it was just very different than anything I had experienced. Lots of really intelligent communication, though, is the main thing. Is, I mean, this is the type of place where you'd walk into a place and you'd be doing, you know, a spirit box session. And you'd say, okay, what color is my shirt? And then, you know, your shirt is black and you'd hear the word black. I mean, extremely intelligent, almost to the point where, you know, I've had dates not go as good where they're not responding as much as the spirits were there. You know what I mean? Like, they were very intelligent, very, you know, lively, you know, and the orbs we got there too. I mean, nothing like it. Absolutely nothing like it. I mean, there was one that was almost the size of a golf ball that we caught on film. And a lot of people want to, you know, debunk orbs. And I think orbs only work if it's video. If it's film, there's a 99% chance it's dust just reflecting back. But when you're seeing it moving, and obviously you can debunk if it's a bug. We explained that in the first episode of the docuseries about, you know, how to look for the wings and see if there's wings there. But it's just a ball of energy spinning. And I think we had, oh man, I want to say we had 12 of them there easily. So, I mean, it was quite an experience. Matter of fact, the very first session, it was Todd and myself sitting on stage, and there's an orb that came right behind him, and that was the one that was the size of a golf ball. So I think normally when you go into a place that has such high expectations and you hear all these stories, you're usually let down. But in this case, it actually exceeded the expectations, and the expectations were extremely high. Would you agree, Todd?
Yeah, and I think we, and we talk about this a lot within our group, and anybody who knows us individually know this already, we're skeptics. I mean, we're skeptical of anything we hear. We're skeptical of things that we think we see or think we hear while we're there. And of course, the stories you're told going in, a ghost dog and people walking around in the basement and all that kind of stuff. You have that information, but you're thinking in the back of your mind, well, you know, this sounds like a story, or this is just, it's propagated over the years, blah, blah, blah. So when you actually get in evidence and you get things like we got at the theater, you're like, okay, now I feel a little bit better about believing some of the other stuff that I've heard.
That makes sense. Are there any tactics that are used when going into an investigation that you believe, maybe over the course of just doing this, that make the spirits or the ghosts feel more comfortable and more at ease, if you will, or more likely to make themselves known or to show themselves guys employ?
I definitely think that's a really good question. We put a lot of pride into being respectful. Essentially, we're talking to people who were once, you know, alive, air quote, alive. And so we treat people the way we want to be treated. It's just really simple as that. We have a really good balance with the four of us. Ann and I are high energy. Todd's kind of in the middle, and Angela's like kind of like on the lower end. So we all balance each other out really well, I think. And it's usually when I would film with the previous group, the energy would usually center around one or two people. But with the four of us, it seems to kind of be distributed equally. And I think that it's because of our approach on being respectful, actually saying verbally out loud, you know, we're not here to harm you. We're here to be friends with you. We want to hear your story. We want to get to know you. Sometimes when we're bantering between the four of us, the spirits will chime in. You know, sometimes it'll be quiet. We'll go in there. We'll be asking questions, because the one thing we don't want to get caught up in too is doing one trick pony type things like, hey, can you move this thing over here? Not to say we don't do that. We do, but we try to just communicate with these people. And then just imagine if someone walked in your room right now and said, hey, can you juggle this basketball? Hey, can you slam this soda down? Like, you're going to be like, what the hell, man? Get out of here. You know? So we try not to make it about that. We kind of try to feel it out, and we're basically throwing darts, asking questions, you know? And usually we find a place where we hit on it. I have, you know, Todd and Ann, and of course my producer, we all do research on the properties before we go there. So we have a little bit of background information. And, but I just really think at the core is being respectful is really the key, and being polite and, you know, obviously not really pushing it. I mean, you see a lot of the provoking and, you know, automatically when something is like, you know, get out of here, automatically on those cable shows, it's a demon. When honestly, it could just be someone like, hey, if you're in the bathroom and someone walks in, you're going to be like, get out of here. Does that mean you're a demon? No, it doesn't. So I just really think it just comes down to the golden rule. Honestly, treat people the way you want to be treated. And that's really how we investigate.
Are there any surefire ways that would almost shut an investigation down? Just ways of handling investigating a specific property that would really make whatever it is that's there not want to come out?
Can I think I want to just, if I can start this one, because yeah. I was going to tag on to the last question. I think it kind of ties over. One of the things that I think we've learned, and it's taken time, and I think really over the investigation period for the docuseries, we've learned that we're not in control of the situation. So we can't tell them how to communicate with us. There's various ways that an energy could communicate with us, whether it's the spirit box, or it's turning on the flashlight, or it's making a sound, or maybe it's talking, or maybe it's creating an EVP. We can try for all those things, but we don't know what we're going to get back. We don't know how we're going to be able to connect. So, you know, as far as shutting down an investigation, again, we don't know. And every investigation is a little bit different. So we could go in there with horns and lights and sirens and all that kind of stuff. And maybe to something there, that would be enough to make them respond. Others maybe may not respond. So I think it's really difficult to throw all investigations into a bucket and say, this works, this doesn't work. I think each one's very, very, very unique. And like I said, I think we kind of opened our eyes to that during the investigation that we were in for the docuseries, all the investigations.
Sure. Yeah, I actually agree with that 100%. It's one of those situations, too, where you don't know until you're there. And we're adjusting on the fly and how to handle this, because if you're dealing with an entity that is, you know, outgoing and silly, where, you know, we've had times where we'll be like, hey, do you want to have a beer with us? And they'll be like, yeah, we'll have a beer with you. And you got other times where you get some serious people, obviously. So it's a lot like in life. You don't really know what you're going to get, and you can't group every personality into a bucket. And just like Todd said, but yeah, as far as shutting things down, we do have one rule, and that's if anyone feels maliciousness, we just tell the other person. And what we our first phase of that is for the, like, so if I'm feeling that there's maliciousness, I'll remove myself. And then if someone else starts to feel it, then we're gone. We no questions asked, we leave. And we just had and I'm not going to say where, but we just had a filming session. We started season 2. And the place we filmed at has a lot of folklore. It's an extremely popular place, which is why I can't say it. And I came out of it. I went into it thinking one thing, and I came out of it thinking something completely different. So I really think part of it, too, is the portrayal of what you see on television. Some of the shows, and you use your own judgment, some of those shows that are out there, you really need to take it with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between education and entertainment. I would say our docuseries, especially in the movies, gravitates more towards education, whereas a lot of the more popular shows that are on TV gravitate more towards entertainment.
Sure. Sure. When it comes to these theaters that you selected for the documentary, we've now talked about the Pabst Theater, Riverside Theater, and the Grand Opera House. And there was a fourth one that you selected. What was it, and why did you choose to investigate there?
That was the most fun of the four. That was the, I'm trying to think of the name of it off the top of my head. It was
Dreamport.
The Barrymore Theater. Yeah, it's had so many different names. The Barrymore Theater in Madison. They just redid all the seats in there, too. So I love the owners. It was by far the most fun because you had mentioned earlier about the whole porn connection. This one's a little creepy, though, and it's not creepy in a spiritual way. During the day, and this is during the 70s when they ran on hard times, during the day they would show kids' movies there. So cartoons, and then at night they would show adult films. So talk about your difference in energy. I mean, you can't get any crazier than that. So when we went there, we had a specific moment that happened where, so we have our main two female cast members. One is blonde and one is the main producer. She's brunette. And they're in the balcony and they got into a discussion about adult films, and like you hear the spirit actually say the word porn, and they're all like, wow. And one of the things we do is we're throwing darts. Again, we're asking questions, and once we start getting responses on a certain topic, we just kind of stay with the topic, you know. and so we sit with this topic, and when my producer came up, and she's gonna be so pissed at me, I'm telling this story, but it's okay. She came upstairs, and Anne, the we'll call her the blonde one for the sake of this story, she said, "Hey, we brought you a present," and his response, the spirit's response was, "How much?" And at the time they didn't really realize what had happened, but just absolutely crazy. I mean, I'm sitting here editing this going, "Well, can I put this in the movie?" I mean, he's talking about porn and prostitutes. absolutely crazy. I mean, and there was a whole bunch of other stuff too that we did. I just couldn't believe it. And I'm trying to think, Todd, were you there for that one?
There's another one that I wasn't there for, but that also had a lot of other cool stuff with equipment coming and doing stuff too. So
yeah, we had a, and I believe that starts the investigation. That's the first one in the four for the movie. And they have, if you know Jason Mansmith, if you know him as Biggie, mm-hmm. I don't know if you know him, Tony.
Yep, I do.
But he was our cameraman for this one. And they have these fire safe doors, which is really standard in most theaters, is the doors on the side of the stages where the talent kind of walks through, connecting it to the main area. There's very extremely heavy doors made of cast iron that you cannot close. There's sensors on them. So if there is a fire, the sensors trip and then the doors will close to protect, you know, to not allow oxygen in to help the fire spread or to prevent the fire from spreading, I should say. So we're starting to film and I ask, is there anybody here? And immediately the fire door closes. And you just cannot close a fire door. If you go to try to close a fire door and put all your might on it and close it and have three men trying to close it, you still can't close the door. So that really started things off for us. And even prior to that, we had some activity with the lights going on and off. And the owner is sitting there looking at us like, are you guys doing this? And I'm like, no, we're not doing this. Are you doing this? And I had to pull up my iPhone because we had just gotten done filming our interviews, and I had to put iPhone footage in the documentary because, I mean, the stuff doesn't obviously happen when you want it to. It happens when it's ready to, and place was definitely lively. I mean, such a fun building. Lots of good energy. It's the type of theater, too, where bands like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Marilyn Manson, Dave Matthews Band, before they're big, that's where they're performing. Before everyone knows who they are, a lot like Jim Gaffigan, you know. I'm trying to name off the top of my head some of the other artists. I can't remember, but he named quite a few of them in the doc.
Rick Astley, you know. Astley, I'm just throwing it out there.
Awesome.
Lionel Richie, I think, way back in the day, performed there as well.
But it's just one of those theaters. It's got that Madison energy, you know, Madison, Wisconsin energy. Mm-hmm. And if that means anything to anyone out there, it's just a very high energy, just lots of love, you know. Mm-hmm. Nothing dark about that place at all. Stuff there, clearly.
When you're getting the audible responses to your questions, what piece of equipment are you using? And do you find that piece of equipment, or is there a piece of equipment that is more reliable than others to get clear responses from them on?
Yeah, we have a couple that we use, and I want a disclaimer before I tell the audience. Please don't mess with this stuff unless you know what you're doing, because you can have bad experiences. You can have things follow you home. So I'm going to answer the question, but I just kind of wanted to put that out there first. So when you hear this, just don't go out and buy it and turn it on in your house, because you could have some bad stuff happen to you. So with that being said, we use what's called the SP7. Also, street name is the Spirit Box. There's multiple ones, but the SP7 is the one we use. There's multiple types of them. It's from Digital Dowsing, which is famously works with the Ghost Adventures TV show. Gary Galka is the owner of that company, and he invented a lot of his equipment because of his beautiful daughter, 17 years old, tragically passed away, and he was so sick about missing her that he tried to create a lot of equipment where, you know, you could communicate. So we use a lot of their products, and that's our go-to. That's our staple, honestly. We use that every time we film. But then we also have digital recorders. I use a lot of products from Zoom. I use the Zoom H2, the Zoom H6. That's our go-to, is the H6. Mm-hmm. They're a little expensive, but they're worth it. But we'll get, so through the Spirit Box, we'll get voices that will communicate using that white noise that comes out of there. But then we also will get EVPs or disembodied voices on our digital recorders as well.
When you're getting the disembodied voices on the recorders where there's nothing there to manipulate it, that's obviously, you know, pretty clear that this is, how did this get here? But it's also got to be somewhat unsettling when you are getting a response, you know, with a Spirit Box type equipment where it's grabbing words from essentially a database, but it's making sense. It's clearly stating identities of names of people that were once in a building or conscious reactions to questions. When you first started using something of that nature, what was your reaction? What was your thought process going in? First of all, did you believe the hype and the things that you had heard about it? And then when you first had a conscious response, how did that strike you?
You want to take this, Todd?
Well, personally, you know, again, I'm a skeptic. So mm-hmm. when we first started working with the Spirit Box and things of that nature, I had to question it, because we were getting you get responses. But how sure are you that that is a response for you and it's not something else? The first time that we used a Spirit Box, and I think it was one that we actually made ourselves, we were able to get a name. And not just any name. It wasn't a typical name like Michael, although we do get that response quite a bit when we investigate. It was a very specific name of a girl. And it just so happened that that girl was sitting there in the room with us doing the investigation with us. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it may have happened twice.
It did.
But when it happened, when she heard her name come across the Spirit Box, the look on her face made me realize how important that piece of equipment was. Still a skeptic? Yes. But is it a very important piece of equipment to investigate? Absolutely. And Tony, you work with audio all the time, so you're a lot like me. That's what I do for a living. Michael works with audio for the film. So when something is there, when you're talking about EVPs, when something's there that wasn't there during the investigation, all of a sudden there's something there, that really is very interesting to me. And then beyond that, the disembodied voice, when you're standing there having a conversation or asking questions, and there's an answer right in front of you from nothing, and you hear it, that's when you go, holy crap, you know, yeah. What is going on here? So yeah, all three levels are cool. Yep.
We just had, where we just filmed for season 2, which I can't say, we actually had two disembodied voices. Todd heard one of them. Remember that, Todd? You heard it.
Yeah, because I was like, did you just say something?
And I said,
like,
no, I didn't say anything. And I went back and listened to it, and there it was. But I do want to, you had mentioned a couple of devices, Tony. You had mentioned the device with the database in it. You're referring to what's called the Ovilus. I'm just going to come out. I'm a very big advocate on debunking that particular device because it, I'm going to be really blunt, it's bullshit. It actually says on the box that is for entertainment purposes only. It's the one that sounds like a speak and spell. A lot of the cable shows use it.
Yeah.
That is not a real tool for paranormal investigation. It's garbage. To add to what Todd just said, we have a, on the docuseries Haunted State, we have a parapsychologist who's world renowned who we interview and we talk to him. And essentially, he's like a real life Egon from Ghostbusters. I mean, the guy is so smart, and all of his thoughts are based on science and evidence. And the one thing about EVPs is that they actually are not auditory. He's talking about psychokinesis on how, especially like if you guys have seen the movie Ghost, how at first Patrick Swayze can't move things, and the other ghost kind of teaches him you have to do it with your mind. So there's three ways that, according to psychokinesis, that a spirit can communicate. One is where the spirit is using their mind, because they obviously don't have a body. They're using their mind to communicate. The second one is that one of the four of us, let's say, have psychokinesis. We have the ability to do it. We don't know that we can do it. We're the ones putting those voices there. And this is according to science. And then the third one is that the spirit or the entity is coming through one of us who has this gift, and we're still putting it on there through them. So he says in the interview that it's kind of a joint project between you and the entity. The other thing is really interesting, and Todd knows about this, is there was a study done in the 1970s where there was a sealed cassette tape in a room where they were having EVPs and experiences. And when they unwrapped the sealed cassette tape after it was done, there were voices on it, which proves it's actually not auditory, which proves that it's those voices are getting there another way. So that's the part that really we want to dig into, is a lot of the ghost shows out there are very surface level, like, oh, they said this, they said that. We try to take the evidence and go further into it. And that's more in the docuseries we do that. In the films, we don't do that. But in the docuseries, we try to dive deep into, okay, we have this evidence. Now what the hell is it? How did it get there? Where did it come from? And that's the part of the paranormal investigation, I think, that really brings the four of us together, because we all really want answers. We're skeptics, but like Mulder, we want to believe, but we also are not sure when stuff is happening. And that's where having a parapsychologist come in and talk about the experiences we're having is extremely helpful, because a lot of the other shows don't really do that.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Michael Brown and Todd Dearing about haunted Wisconsin theaters. Thank you for supporting our program and keeping it on the air. Without you guys, this would not exist. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.